Hi, everyone. Welcome to Taz Talk, the show where we talk about the Adventure Zone podcast. Today we're talking about episode 5 of the Amnesty mini arc.
I can't believe we're here already. 5 episodes. I feel like that went by really quick, Rachel.
I know. I can't believe Dust is starting next week. I mean, they're doing the setup episode, but like they're not, no break or anything. They're just going right into it.
Yeah. I know we want to get to the episode, but real quick, I just want to mention, I kind of love weekly Taz. Like,
I know.
I think it's because they're just like really indulging us for the folks who listen to podcasts like routinely. I've never like kept up with something so faithfully before as far as like podcasts go. So this is super fun and I really enjoy it.
It's really fun. And it was one of those things where the McElroys are wondering it and the fans were wondering it, but the question of how much are people going to like it when it's not balance arc anymore.
Mm-hmm,
but I like every time it's Thursday morning, I'm texting you like, Chelsea, the episode's coming out today. And I'm like super jazzed about it. So it's been a good, fun, exciting experience.
Yeah, I'm into it. I turned on post notifications for the Adventure Zone Twitter so that as soon as it gets uploaded, I could just send it to Rachel and be like, okay, it's a good day. It's time.
Nice.
let's dive on in.
The fight scene at the beginning, well, not the fight scene, the scene with Ned driving around and kind of dodging the monster.
Yes.
The abomination, I suppose, was really cool. It was like the Griffin's narration in this, I forget, are they doing, this is Powered by the Apocalypse, Monster of the Week, right?
Monsters of the Week, yeah.
Like, it's the way actions happen in Monster of the Week feels different than D&D in a subtle way that I can't really put into words.
Mm-hmm.
But the way these action scenes get narrated feels different. And it's really cool. Like, Griffin's doing a really good job. It was like that whole driving scene where Ned was trying to drive away from the abomination was very dramatic and high tension. And it was really neat.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on that too. I think a couple episodes, and I feel like I might have already talked about this before, but I think that I commented on how I wasn't sure if I liked how Griffin was doing like a little mini episode with each of the characters before, like, they definitely spent more time apart than they ever did together. But I think as like a listener, it's such an enriching listening experience because it's playing out like a narrative in a book, because these characters naturally wouldn't all be together all the time. Like how in D&D, like when you're in a party, it's, maybe that's just the nature of D&D, but like you find yourself with these characters, and for a lot of campaigns, like if you don't establish a backstory at that moment, like you're just brought together by fate or you're brought together by like a bounty or something. And you know, so a lot of times it can be really good and engaging, but a lot of times it can also be really awkward. So I think, you know, like taking this introductory phase of the game in stride and just doing it naturally, like mini episodes and little dialogue and little backstories, I think it's a lot more work for the DM because they really do have a lot of pans in their fire. But as a listener, this is really, it's a treat.
Yeah, and it's also, you're right about it feeling more like they couldn't be all together all the time for this kind of story. It wouldn't make sense. They all are living their separate lives. And we're looking at, I think we're looking at their everyday lives much more closely, because in D&D, there was always this implied downtime where they were just training on the moon base. And then we would see them when they were together doing a mission. But this story, the structure isn't like that.
And you know,
exactly.
Like even just talking about the balance arc, like the lunar interludes and what they were doing in the off time, those were some of the best parts of the podcast. So
that's true.
For these casual moments to be built into the structure of the game, I think it's fascinating. And it's something that you don't often see when you're playing or listening to live action role play podcasts.
I think also having them not all together all the time makes the times when they are together really exciting, because it's like, oh, finally they're interacting.
Even just the scene where Ned and Duck are in the Cryptonomica and they're going into the chicanery and they're getting Beacon out for the first time. Like, even those isolated scenes where it's just one-on-one character interactions, like, that is also real great. And this was also a transition, a segue, so that we could talk about Beacon.
Yeah, we got to talk about fucking Beacon, because Jesus Christ. I remember when they started off this arc, the Justin's character choice, I thought was kind of, it was interesting because Duck is such a, is compared to Taco, is so much more reserved and level-headed and sort of unfunny in a way. But I see now, I guess this was the plan all along. Duck is so funny because he's a foil for Minerva and for Beacon. And so the humor is that you have this sort of droll character surrounded by and responding to these really wacky characters. Like, even the way Duck responds to, say, Aubrey, who isn't, like, a talking sword, but is pretty hyper and silly. It's really, it works out really well. And Beacon was fucking unbelievable. Just, like, that one, the thing that was so fun about that scene was when he was first talking and hearing Griffin and I think Clint, like, trying not to laugh in the background. That killed me. And I need more of this because I need to hear Duck, Minerva, and Beacon all interacting at the same time.
Oh my god, yeah. That...
Right?
I feel like that's a lot, like, for Justin to have to go back and forth from character to character. But, I mean, Griffin does it all the time. I think that would be so funny, though. Like, now that you mention it, like, how do Beacon and Minerva interact? Like, they must know about each other. Like, they must in on their own. Like, maybe are they in cahoots? Like, they know what Duck is supposed to be and what he's supposed to be doing, and each, like, they're both encountering Duck not wanting to do it on their own. So that's really fascinating.
I have no idea what the relationship is between Beacon and Minerva, only that in episode 2, I think Minerva asks Duck, where is your weapon, Duck Newton? As if, like, clearly there's, I have no idea. The whole end scene with Minerva really threw me, and I didn't know what to make of it.
It felt a lot like the first Lunar Interlude, where the hunger came out for the first time and, like, made everyone prone, and then you were just kind of like, I don't know what to make of this. Is it a big deal? Is it not a big deal? I can't really tell. And I think that's a really good way, you know, to, it's a good way to transition. If they were to continue the story, like, it leaves something to think back on. Well, are they going to expand on this? Are they going to explain this? Like, it leaves the listeners with a question that maybe one day we'll get to hear the answers for. I do also, I really wanted to mention that as we are getting to know all of these different characters that the boys are creating and things. I really appreciate that no matter what Justin does, he always finds a character that is, I don't even know how to describe them, but, like, they're just above everything else, like Garrel and Cardala and now Beacon. And that's just, it tickles me.
Yeah, actually, the relationship between Duck and Beacon seems to be much more like what I wanted the relationship between Irene and Cardala to be. Just kind of like these very different personalities having to deal with having to be around each other and work together.
But that's why I want to hear more of commitment, because I think if they had time and if they were afforded the opportunity to expand more on their characters, like, maybe we would have been able to explore more and see them interact with each other. Because you're right, in the couple episodes that we got with them, Irene had a couple episodes and a couple lines, but other than that, it was Cardala, 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 no Irene whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why...
Yeah, Irene basically got fucking deleted. Yeah. It was really weird. I still feel really weird about that.
Which is why I'm like,
thing.
I want more commitment so that they can, you know, like, explain this to me and, you know, flesh it out more. But I think that's why Beacon and Duck is so satisfying. Kind of like how Garrel and Taco were more satisfying. Garrel is just, on his own, a fabulous character. You don't need a whole lot of depth with a bi-unicorn. A binicorn? A rainbow binicorn. Yeah, binicorn. Like... but, like, you don't really need a whole lot of depth for that kind of a character. But Beacon, like, there is a lot of potential for agony. Well, not agony, but, like, angst. There's a lot of opportunity for angst and character interaction, character development, which I really like that. So, and that's Yeah, it's kudos to Justin for coming up with these characters and also these side characters that serve to further his characters. Like, it's just really phenomenal character building.
Uh-huh, yeah. The funniest fucking thing about Beacon was that, like, the rancor coming off of
good
him.
Good word.
So obvious. And, like, he clearly is, like, very upset with Duck. Clearly very much dislikes Ned. And yet he, like, can't resist the opportunity to make those fucking sword puns. It's like he's so angry, and then, like, all of a sudden he's riffing back and forth with Ned's, because it's like, it's like he just can't resist. It was so funny. What a ridiculous character. And then later on in the fight scene where he, Duck, like, stabs the abomination with Beacon, and Beacon, like, is, like, almost, like, in this orgasmic voice, is like, oh, God, finally. It was like, oh, what a, this character is so weird. I can't believe he has a mouth.
Jesus because Christ. He has a mouth, it sort of reminded me how Persona games or in Final Fantasy games, they have those trick chest monsters, the trickster chest, where...
Oh, like the mimics?
Yeah, yeah, like the mimics, where it's, like, the chest, and then, but if you open it, it's the teeth and the tongue.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to imagine how this is supposed to, like, I have a hard time imagining what Beacon looks like.
Yeah,
I think
same.
Originally, it sounded like they wanted it to be, like, a sword from Ivy from Soul Calibur. I can't remember if they mentioned that in the episode or if I was just thinking it really hard, like, while I was listening to it, so hard that it became canon in my head. but she has, like, a sword that when she pushes a button, I guess, it's like vertebrae on a spine. So, yeah, they can be rigid when she, like, pulls the cable.
Okay,
yeah, and
it.
It's, like one solid blade. But then when she, like, pulls the button or whatever, they fall apart and they're like a whip.
Right.
Yeah. So ideally, like, and I kind of want to make this. Like, in my head, I'm like, can I cosplay Duck? Can I make this sword? Because I really, 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 really want to.
Well, no. He described it as, like, a coil.
Yeah.
Not something that was a chain.
Well,
so
I mean,
like...
Well, a coil, like, wouldn't you... When you say coil, I think something that's, like, wound in itself.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you can wrap a chain around itself. Like, you can have a coiled chain. Like, you can have a whip that is made of, you know, like, braided leather, but once you, like, wrap it around itself, it's a coil. I couldn't tell...
guess that's true.
I mean, I
think they... I remember them saying, like... that the attribute was long, and Griffin was saying, oh, I thought you were going to go with a chain, but this is good too.
Yeah.
So I thought it was, the way I was trying to picture this, and I thought that, like, it was coiled, and then it, like, uncoils itself.
That's, I think, how they described it in
the episode. I don't
know,
it's really difficult for me to picture.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll send you a picture of Ivy, because I think that's what Justin's going for. I don't know. I'll tweet at them. In the past,
what the fuck does your goddamn sword look like?
let me draw some ideas of what I think it is. In the past week, both Griffin and Justin have, like, responded to my tweets. So I was, like, over the moon last week. Oh my god,
ooh, Chelsea, big shot.
I know. It's almost like I'm their friends, basically. So I mean, nah. I'm gonna stand by. I think it's a chain sword whip thing. Like Ivy from Soul Calibur, and I'll send you a picture because I think that's what they're going for. But I don't know where the mouth fits in. Like,
it's
the mouth
on there, dude? I don't know. I'm imagining it, like, right next to the hilt, like maybe right on the hilt,
like on the cross guard.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I don't know the sword anatomy so good.
I don't know. You know how Kylo Ren has that big lightsaber with the two little nubbins on the side?
Uh huh.
I think that's a cross guard. I think.
Okay.
And I think that's where the mouth would be, I guess. Like, you know how rapiers have, like, it's like a dome that protects the hilt?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I guess maybe it has one of those dome thingies as a cross hilt, and maybe that's where the mouth is, maybe.
I hate that. I hate picturing that a whole lot. Don't like it. That's actually, I mean, like, that's all I have to say about Beacon, except that I can't. I gotta hear more of this character speaking.
Yeah.
It's just like, I was laughing. It was one of those times, which felt really good, because this is something that would happen to me during Balance Arc, where I was listening at work, and I had to pause the thing and, like, put my head down, because I was, like, trying not to laugh out loud in my office.
That's pretty accurate. One last note on Beacon design is, The first thing I envisioned was that he had these, like, a human mouth, but on a sword. And that immediately I hate. So instead, to give you, like, a better thing to imagine is maybe there's, like, gold filigree, kind of like in Beauty and the Beast, where the live-action Beauty and the Beast, which I don't really like, but the character design is pretty pretty, kind of, sort of.
How Lumiere had a face or whatever?
Yeah. I have a lot of feelings about the live-action Beauty and the Beast for what it could have been more than what it actually was. But the way that they did were, like, the faces were kind of painted on. Like, how it was, like, the filigree that moved around to make it look like a mouth.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, like that, I can make peace with that a lot better than a sword having lips and a tongue and teeth.
Oh, Beacon! God! Okay.
Anyway.
I wanted to jump back a little bit to, first of all, the image of Aubrey, like, jumping from hiding spot to hiding spot in the cave was really adorable.
Yeah, yeah.
But then also, during that scene, did Barclay hint at a tragic backstory?
For
himself? Because I thought, like, okay, I actually don't remember this super well. I meant to listen to the episode again, but I've already forgotten, even though it's been, like, 2 days. But it was the case that during that early scene, Aubrey and Barclay were in the cave together, and they were kind of talking, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they, I'm pretty sure Barclay said something about, like, you gotta blah, 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 because this bad thing happened to me. I don't remember exactly, but I thought he said something that made me think, like, oh, shit, some rough stuff happened to him, and he's got, like, some bad memories.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that also, but I don't know that they went into it a whole lot. I think he was asking Aubrey, like, why are you doing this? Like, you don't have to do this, you know? But he was like, he meant it in a way of appreciation, because I guess Mama has been trying to recruit more people for the Pine Guard, but no one's really been up to snuff, or maybe they haven't stuck around. So I think, like, he was alluding to his own backstory, because he figured, well, if you're staying here like I'm staying here, it's because something happened that this is better than whatever it was that you're, you know, coming from, I guess,
interesting.
Maybe.
Got it.
I also wanted to... Oh, go ahead. You go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, mine is a lot less important. I just
So is mine. Mine's less important than that, even.
Well, mine was just... I chuckled because folks keep calling Barclay Barkley. Because in my head, I'm like, it's Barclay. It's not Barkley. Just like how I end up calling Aubrey Audrey instead of Aubrey.
But they do say Barclay, right?
They sometimes, but a couple times, and I couldn't remember if it was Travis or Griffin, but they called him Barkley instead of Barclay. So
I
wrote it down.
It might be one of those things where it looks, if you were to look at it spelled, it would look like Barkley, but it's pronounced Barclay because of regional pronunciation differences.
Yeah, now I'm curious. Okay, remind me after we finish. I'll tweet at them and say, hey, couple questions. What does Beacon look like? And is it, how do you spell Barclay?
The fire necklace is in Ned's vault also.
Yep.
That's interesting. I also loved hearing Griffin respond to the Oscar was priceless.
Oh my god, yeah.
And I loved that it cracked me up that Clint chose George Clooney as the victim of the theft, because if he chose some, like, old dead actor, then it could have been just like, oh, that's believable that maybe that happened to someone. But the fact that he chose George Clooney implies that, like, within this universe, George Clooney had his Oscar stolen and either doesn't know or just didn't tell anyone about it. Aubrey, like, cackling when she uses the big fire was really funny, too, during the fight scene.
Yes.
The combat's very interesting because there's a lot more creative license with what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And in D&D, there's, like, very specific rules, and combat is very straightforward, and, like, you just apply these rules, and then it kind of goes from there. But I feel like Griffin has to do a lot more making up stuff that happens, which... it seems like it's a lot of work, actually. Maybe he loves it. I would hate it.
I hope that he loves it. Yeah, it's a lot of improvising on the DM side, or the keeper, on the keeper's side. I mean, for all we know, maybe he does have different scenarios cooked up, but as we
know,
like, even as a DM, you can have a lot of responses and a whole map and all of these NPCs and this whole, like, timeline of how you want things to happen, and then your players are going to kill the first NPC that they see, and then everything goes to shit. So,
sure.
I mean, I feel like that kind of stuff could happen regardless of what kind of game you're playing. But I thought it's interesting that you mentioned the fight, because I know that we've talked about the fight systems between D&D and Fate and Monster of the Week. Like, we've been comparing them as we go along. But this one, I feel like, was the most, not linear, but, like, the most structured game for Monster of the Week that we've had. So I had a lot of time to kind of come up with my opinion about it. And I think, you know, I still think the same thing, that I appreciate the fight system of Monster of the Week a little bit more than I do of D&D and Fate, only because when it's really dependent on your roles, whether you get a success or like a big success or like a mixed success, that determines like what extra thing happens. I know that with Fate, a lot of my opinions were that the fight was like a negotiation. This one in Monster of the Week, like the fights still seem like a conversation, but it's things like, well, you rolled an 8, so you definitely do some damage, but now I get to do something, or like you have to, like something happens that isn't entirely positive because you didn't like roll a big enough success, you know? And I thought it was interesting that when they rolled like a 10 or higher, I think was the threshold, I forget, but like there were 4 things that they could do. And I'm not sure if that they were limited to only 4 things or if that's, you know, just what they decided on like previously or whatever, but I liked that there wasn't a whole, like, it was still really structured. Like in Fate, I feel like I didn't like it just because there was, I couldn't follow what the structure was. But with Monster of the Week, like if you do a big success, like you either take less damage, you do more damage, or like you give your advantage to someone else, or something like that along those lines. And I think that was, for me at least, a lot more straightforward. I like the fight system. I know that I think you've talked about it, and you like the structure of D&D a little bit more just because it's more grounded in like rules and like guidelines and things. But I like the narrative aspect of the fight system in Monster of the Week.
I was gonna say, I think this game is better for Clint, because you know how on balance he was always trying to get like do wacky stuff during his turn.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, I want to get on my broom and pick up the bad guy and fly it into the rhino horn. And Griffin was always like, okay, well, hang on. And like trying to negotiate with him.
Yeah.
But in this episode, he was just like, I want to take my walking stick and shove it down the abomination's throat.
Yeah,
and Griffin's
yeah.
like, okay, here's what you roll. And it's just like, I feel like he gets more creative license in what he gets to do. And that's fun.
Yeah. I do like that. I know in D&D, like, we, especially for spellcasters, like, you have a move, and that's your move, and you can, like, really clearly visualize it, and when it's your turn and you have to go attack the monster, you know you're gonna do, like, magic missile or something
mm-hmm.
else. But I like that it's prompting them to roleplay a little bit more, and then the keeper is just kind of taking what they want, and like you were saying, like, they kind of figure out how to make it work in the system, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
But did you also notice that everyone's dice were rolling super hot? Like, no one really failed. Which is good.
Uh-huh,
which
yeah.
is good. But also, like, damn. It's McElroy's.
Yeah, Griffin was commenting that on that, too, during the fight. I think this happened, but before Aubrey first attacks the monster, she says, like, sorry about this. And that attitude, it's something I really like about Aubrey. And it was something in the planning kind of whole scene from last episode where she was saying, like, the term abomination seems a little harsh,
yeah.
but there's something I think really, like, kind-hearted about her, and maybe to the point of being naive, but, like, the attitude she takes is, like, the same attitude I have instinctually, where it's, like, if there are all these monsters and they're actually nice, why couldn't this thing also be actually nice? Like,
yeah.
this kind of attitude of, I don't want to just assume this thing's evil and I need to kill it, you know?
Yeah.
And I really like that about her.
Yeah. That I think speaks a lot to Travis. Travis is a big animals person, and Magnus. Yeah. Magnus was really like that too. Nadia, we didn't really have opportunity to see it quite so much, but Aubrey, and I think we've talked about it before, but Aubrey feels like the most positive version of Travis, and that's like what he would love to see put out into the world. Is just this super positive, enthusiastic person, who brings up. She, like, lifts up the people who are around her, it seems like. And I think that's really neat. Also, speaking of, like, you know, if the monsters... Why can't the monsters be nice? Like, why isn't there a peaceful way to end things? We were joking in the other episode of, like, well, what if they just try to clothe the abomination? Like, is it really an abomination? Maybe it's just scared or angry or upset and it doesn't know any better. But I can't remember if it was in this episode or last week's episode where the abomination was on fire and then it shed its coat of, like, animals and things. A thought crossed my mind where I was like, is the abomination trying to clothe itself? Because, like, maybe we're...
I still don't think that would work. I think this is a stretch, Chelsea.
No, but that's the thing. Like, it definitely didn't work because he was wearing, like, other animals' fur on his body. Is it on their body? He was still very angry. So, you know, like, officially, my clothing the abominations makes them nice theory doesn't really hold any water.
Oh, your poor theory.
Why do we gotta fight all the bomb bombs? Like, well, and maybe that's, you know, like, if they move on, maybe we'll find abominations that aren't completely evil and they end up being friendly or something. It's just that this one happened to be very deadly and needed to be destroyed.
Maybe. I mean, the hunger was evil. Or the hunger... I mean, you could take this argument all the way down to the question of what is actually evil.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I just think, like, the hunger... I think Griffin needs to have a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know?
There needs...
It's a fighting game.
Yeah.
Although I still think it would have been really cool if it had turned into, like, gotta figure out how to save this monster and, like, then, you know, bring them back to the lodge and then it would be good.
Yeah, well,
like,
hold on a
Griffin,
second.
You missed an opportunity.
It could still be like that, though, and I kind of hope that it is. Like, as exciting as it would be to beat the big bad of the week every time, like, it's a lot more interesting of a story if there's possibility for negotiation and recruitment and... Like, in Pokemon, Team Rocket doesn't get, like, annihilated every single time. And sometimes, like, they even befriend Team Rocket and, you know, it makes the story richer as an effect. So, I mean...
Yeah.
There's...
I mean, this is the problem with any kind of game like this where combat is a big focus.
Yeah.
Any kind of video game or any kind of tabletop game like this is, like, the people that you're killing are... Like, evil is a very black and white sort of concept, but most people aren't evil. They just, like, are doing things for the wrong reasons, or they have, like, they had something bad happen to them and it's made them some way, or, like, you just have opposing, like, kind of differences in opinion, or, like, it was kind of like how Duck was saying the black bear isn't evil for eating the fish.
Yeah.
But if you're a fish, you don't want to get eaten.
Yeah.
So there's, like, this complication, and this comes up in D&D, and it comes up in this game, yeah, where it's like, well, I don't want to kill this creature, but, like, what's going to happen if I don't? It's, like, that's the kind of dilemma here with any of these sorts of games.
Yeah. I guess if you were to bring that into what we know of Monster of the Week, like, the question becomes, well, do we have to destroy the abominations? Like, is there another way? Like, what happens if we don't? And I think we already know what happens if we don't. Is if you don't kill the... Well, it's not if you don't kill the abominations. It's just if you don't resolve the abominations, that they, like, get loose and wreak havoc on the world, potentially. So maybe that's something... And this might be, like, completely different from how Griffin envisions this arc to... take place, but maybe that's something that we might see in the future if this is how they decide to do chapter 2 of the Adventure Zone, is every week it's more like a puzzle than it is like a big bad. I think that would be really exciting. Not that I would be disappointed if we didn't get this, but if they decided to go down that route, I think that would be really incredible podcasting and, like, incredible narrative. Huh. Rachel, now I really want it. Dang it. Like, it can't just be one monster that's killing something different every week. Like, there's got to be like a different kind of puzzle. Like, maybe the monster is stealing everyone's left sock. And like, or maybe, you know, so it doesn't have to be I'm gonna go kill it every single time, you know? But you're right. Like, in a story and in a game that is combat centric, like, you kind of need to kill something, I guess.
Or you at least need to incapacitate them.
Yeah, but I think,
But yeah, it's one of those things where I think the sort of monster of the week genre, not just the modern stuff like Buffy, but anything that was like, Power Rangers or any of those kinds of shows where a bad guy appears and then you have to defeat the bad guy. I think those ideas are maybe a little old-fashioned
I think
or
maybe.
like outdone, and a modern audience wants more gray morality sort of situations.
Yeah.
And so
Well, and that's, I think,
like
what.
killing the abominations feels like killing animals, and it's like, okay, the bear's gonna eat me, so I have to kill the bear, but I still feel bad. Like, the bear does not have malicious intent necessarily, it's just acting on instinct. And I think that's how Aubrey feels about the abominations, and it's even in like some way how Ned felt about them, although I don't think he has as strong of a like pity reaction as Aubrey did.
Well, I think that's why Griffin m made this first monster be something that was inorganic, and it wasn't, it killed animals, which was bad, but it itself wasn't an animal. Like, it didn't have any organs. It was just oil. Like, much to his credit, like, it didn't make it so that you're hunting like this beast necessarily. You're hunting like this entity thing, but it didn't seem alive. It didn't seem sentient. It just seemed angry. Kind of like Ghostbusters, I guess, but I've also never seen Ghostbusters. But
I was gonna say kind of like The Hunger.
yeah, exactly. Like, it's an inhuman, inorganic thing, which is a lot easier to kill off than it is to kill off like something sentient. But
Sure.
like, bringing it back to the Adventure Zone balance, like, what made balance fun wasn't that they were going off to go kill the big bad every single arc. Like, there was a puzzle. Like, the Rockport Limited, there was a murder, and you had to go find who the murderer was. Maybe you had to kill the murderer at the very end. Spoilers, I guess. Rest in peace, Jenkins. But like, there was a lot of puzzles that had to happen before you get to the very end. And even thinking about like the 11th hour, there wasn't really a big bad. You had the chalice and this mystery, and you had to go solve the mystery.
I mean, I think there's like the big bad was the purple worm, but and that was a huge fight. But again, yeah, you're right. It was a thing. This is something that happened over the course of the balance arc where we started off with very standard D&D. There's a final boss, there's a villain, there's Clark, there's Jenkins. But then by the third arc, Griffin started to develop more complex sympathetic villains like Sloane, fucking Lucas. And like the purple worm,
Yeah, these are all
I guess
characters.
the twins
Oh, yeah, except those.
in Wonderland were a little irredeemable, but still, like, I felt bad for them, like when they were dying, and so yeah, I
That's
guess it.
like those characters that come like that with the gray morality, like you were saying, the characters that came back to fight, help them fight against the hunger at the very end, like the characters that we became endeared for because of their character development, because of their arc, like those are the stories. That's why I started and stuck with the Adventure Zone for so long, is because they were able to tell these complicated stories and make me like these characters that weren't super good or super evil, but maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah, speaking of Monster of the Week, it's just like Dragon Ball Z, where you get a bad guy, there's a bunch of episodes of Goku fighting the bad guy, and then later the bad guy's your friend, like Piccolo, Vegeta, all those dudes were evil in the beginning, and then like later they kind of got absorbed into the team, and it's like that's what we want. We want to kill them with kindness.
Yeah, and see, so maybe that's something that maybe the abomination, maybe there's a Vegeta abomination on the horizon.
Yeah,
Like,
maybe there's an Undyne abomination.
yeah, exactly. But we won't know unless they do more. So, but that's, I think, that sums up what we would like to see if they were to move forward with this arc of the Adventure Zone, is don't just make it monsters that you have to find and then kill. Like, we hope that there's still some complex storytelling and that there's more than just combat. Which, knowing Griffin, there will be, but I mean, who knows?
Yeah, make it happen, Griffin. Make it happen. Okay. One thing that was funny is that if Clint and Justin are no longer in the room together, they can no longer keep each other honest. Which I don't think that was ever so much of a problem, yeah. But it's just fun to think about that. And I have mixed feelings about this because some of the parts that I really, really liked in Balance was when something would happen and Clint and Justin would say, like, we're just looking at each other. Like, they, like, laughed out loud, and then Clint goes, like, yeah, we just, like, looked at each other across the room. Like, and, like, that was in really intense moments where a big reveal would happen, yeah. And they'd go, like, what the fuck do we do? Yeah. And I really appreciated them, like, even though it is one of those, like, it was just them describing, interacting with each other in person, but it was really fun to hear, and I really liked it. Something about that was really satisfying.
Yeah.
And so I will miss that.
Yeah.
But I'm happy that, I guess I'm happy that Justin doesn't have to deal with Clint being around and, like, spilling Coke on his keyboard or whatever.
And now they don't have to race to the bathroom after recording the episode.
Yeah.
Because now they're
next
to... So
maybe it's for the best.
Now they're next to their own bathrooms. So that's pretty funny.
I'm trying to think if I have anything else important to say.
I have one thing about Aubrey, but it's a very little thing. Well, it's a couple things. So Travis did a luck. Travis used one of his luck things, which I just wanted to mention because was it that it turns everything automatically to a 12 or was it?
I don't remember. Okay. I don't remember how that works exactly.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't remember either. Another thing I wanted to mention was that, Duck was so hesitant to go fight, but then he turned out that he was their tank because he doesn't.
I know.
When that line that Justin told Griffin, that he was like, Griffin, don't bother me if it's anything less than a 2. Like,
I know.
I thought that was so funny.
That's really funny. I hadn't thought about them in those terms before, and I don't know if they really apply exactly, but yeah, Duck's the tank.
Yep.
Aubrey's DPS. Ned must be the heels. Hat's got to. I also really liked, so getting kind of fast forwarding to the end, mm-hmm. I liked, first of all, Travis finally remembered to ask how his pet was doing when he asked about Dr. Bonkers.
Yeah.
Who is clearly now the new Steven.
Yes.
Unless they end up doing something more interesting. I really liked how in Minerva's scene with Duck, Minerva asks, like, I forget what she says exactly, but she's asking, like, are you less afraid now? And Duck goes, you know, I think I'm more afraid. I thought that was a really good line.
Yeah.
Because the rest, I think because right after, so we get Aubrey reading the letter from Mama, mm-hmm. which is very cute, but, like, in a way it felt very much like the last half hour of the balance, or the last, like, hour of the balance arc, where everyone was getting, like, you know, everyone, all the NPCs were telling the PCs how proud they were of them. And it felt very much, like, congratulatory. And so I was actually really, it was really cool to hear Duck not go, oh, yeah, I learned something about myself, and now I'm better off from having that experience. It was him going, like, I don't know, I don't feel confident about my decision.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen next. I really liked that.
Yeah, it's something a little different.
Yeah. And I was actually a little afraid when Aubrey was reading the letter from Mama, just because it felt so much like the end of Balance.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, oh no, Griffin's wrapping it up, so that they're not going to come back to this. But then we get the part with Minerva, which was totally mysterious and baffling. And that kind of gave me some more hope, because it's like, you can't open up those kinds of cliffhangers and not return to this story, right?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully. Here's hoping.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
And it also occurred to me that even if they don't do a whole season of Amnesty, they could very easily just come back to it for more mini arcs in the future.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could actually pretty easily see. I know that they've said that they would just do Trace Horny Boys for all of the live shows. But if they wanted to do, like, a one-shot with these characters,
oh, that might be fun.
Pretty down. Yeah.
Yeah. Heck yeah. So, yeah, I just thought, I'm hoping that even if they don't do a full season of Amnesty, this is not the last that we will get of these characters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Especially with Griffin dropping cliffhangers left and right at the end, so.
Oh, Griffin.
But anyway, I'm psyched for Dust.
I am psyched for Dust.
Super psyched. I think that's going to be really fun.
Have you ever heard of Urban Shadows?
No, I thought Travis was making up. I thought previously he'd said he was making up his own game system for this, so I just assumed that was the name of the game system he invented. Maybe it's actually something.
Well, maybe. Well, he mentioned it, and then he was like, well, if you want to go read up on it, like, there's the name. Go look it up. Obviously, I did not look it up.
It is an urban fantasy role-playing game published by Magpie Games. Apparently in... Oh, this is not Western like I was imagining. This is, like, urban fantasy. Well, like,
with a name like Urban Shadows, stuff. I kind of...
Well, yeah. Huh, interesting, interesting.
Yeah, I wonder... I guess I'll take a look at the gameplay going on, but Thursday is going to be a big day. All right. I think that's it for me. Did you have anything else?
Nope, that's it for me too.
Cool, cool.
So if you want to get in contact with us, you can send us an email at taztalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach us at taztalk.tumblr.com.
Neat, neat. If you want to tweet at us, we are on Twitter. We are at taztalkpodcast.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So Dust next week. Psyched for that. We'll see what happens. I guess it's not a Western, but I'm super down either way. Bye, everyone. Bye. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Go get your laundry.